Welcome to Vistage Live, the place you can come to for insights, knowledge and perspectives from a range of experts who can help your small and mid-sized business make a great big impact. Our guest today is Michael Donohue, the founder of Advisor AI. With over 16 years of expertise in fintech, digital payments, and AI innovation. Michael's commitment to real-world outcomes has established him as an expert trainer and speaker, helping businesses adopt AI seamlessly, cost-effectively, and with lasting impact. Passionate about turning ideas into reality, Michael is on a mission to demystify AI and empower organizations to thrive in a rapidly evolving digital landscape. Michael, welcome to Vistage Live.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's great to have you here.
I'm looking forward to today's discussion.
To having a chat about AI.
Yes, it's a big topic.
It is a big topic, and we have spoken about it, I can think, a few times, maybe even more, on Vistage. On Vistage Live. And something I think that we've got the point about the newness of it, ever-changing, mindset, excitement, I think that we're pretty good on that. And I know our members at Vistage have got to that stage. But you've spoken to me about adoption and that being really important. Tell me about that part of the journey for us all.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, but I think in terms of all the research I've read and the study I've done, but more importantly, talking with business owners, I think a lot of them are really struggling where to start, what to do to get going.
You know,
when I talk to them about their communication plans with their staff and their teams, do they have a policy in place? What's their strategy? In many cases, they haven't yet started that journey. So it's kind of moving from zero to one is an area where a lot of businesses seem to struggle with. They just don't know where to start.
Yes.
And given the enormous and transformative nature of AI, I think it's really important that businesses really focus on this area as an important priority, because particularly in 2025, it's going to be a beginning of an era of significant transformation within our businesses. So I think it's very important that businesses to kind of get ahead of the curve, communicate to their teams what the plan is, what the strategy is, think about messaging, you know, getting feedback from the team, having open discussions, planning the process, the education process. But also I find once I do education sessions with teams, it's very important also that they don't just walk away and go back to their old behaviors and habits. It's about putting in place frameworks so they kind of take that learning and embed it into their business.
So great. So let's go back over some of that. The idea of where to start is tricky, isn't it? Because we've kind of all started at something without reading the rules. We've started a game without reading the rules. So because there haven't been rules for this game.
Yeah.
Here's this amazing thing. Here's this amazing set of tools. Just have a play with it. People say, just have a play with it. But then I know you spoke to my team this week, which was good, about, you know, a planned rollout. And my CFO, and I'll be, you know, clear because I don't think he'll be listening, came and said to me at the end, we have to stop everyone putting all our data everywhere. And I said, what? We have to stop this. We have to stop it. We have to stop that. We have to shut it down. We have to stop people from ever using this ever anywhere. And I said, no, that's not an option.
Yep.
Well, they're putting all our data all over the internet. And I said, that's not what's happening. So I think policies are really important, aren't they?
Yeah. Policy is important. Communication is critically important. There's a lot to unpack in terms of your kind of your question. But I think policies are important. But once again, with some guidance, you don't have to write War and Peace. It doesn't have to be overly complicated. You can solve that problem pretty quickly. But I think also a lot of companies tend to overcomplicate their AI adoption. They think they need huge budgets. They need technical expertise, and they don't. I think a lot of businesses see AI as a technological product, which it is. And as such, it's often ran by the IT department.
Yeah.
You know, I love IT departments. My background's in fintech as a CEO and founder. I think with AI, we need to make sure that we broaden their engagement across the company, much broader stakeholder engagement, not just AI, and bring the whole team along in your journey in terms of communication. Because AI is a very psychologically sensitive topic. People are worried about their jobs. You know, when I do workshops with people, I always ask, usually in the one session, you know, what do you feel or what do you think when you hear the word AI? And I hear people say they're excited, they're interested, it's cool. Other people say they're petrified, they're scared. They hope they never have to use it. They think it's going to steal all their data. So there's a whole gamut of different perceptions. And with that, there's also a huge amount of misunderstanding and confusion, because a lot of the information in the media is actually quite confusing. And it can be misleading. And there's obviously big narratives being pushed by big tech, which doesn't help, you know, in terms of the process.
Let's get to, I love demystifying. Let's have the AI demystifier here, Michael. Is it safe for organizations to put data into a large language model?
I would say it depends in terms of what service provider you're using and what model you're using.
Right.
So when I do training or workshops with teams, I only ever recommend the major players, the big players like Microsoft, ChatGPT, Anthropic. Because I know they spend...
And Anthropic is Claude, isn't it?
Exactly, It's one of my favourite models, one of the lesser known ones.
I'm all over it. I've done three or four podcasts on this. So the big players.
The big players. Because I know they're obviously billion-dollar valuation organisations who are spending billions of dollars on privacy and security and compliance.
Yes.
So these big players obviously also operate around the world, but also in the European Union. So the EU...
Greatest privacy...
Legislation.
Compliance,
The Artificial Intelligence Act from the EU is the most stringent legislation in terms of security and privacy, plus the GDPR, other regulation in terms of data security and privacy.
Yes.
So they need to comply with this very onerous regimes, and if they don't, they'll be fined significant amounts of money, up to $35 million.
Yes.
So I know those players are very secure.
Great.
Everything they do is encrypted. But there's other players on the periphery.
Right.
There's thousands of startups and new companies, value-added providers.
Yes.
You need to be more careful and mindful with them in terms of, because they don't spend billions of dollars in security and compliance.
Yes.
So companies need to be very careful with who they deal with in this space.
Thank you. That's great. That's one of the challenges or one of the objections that comes up.
Yeah.
What about a policy on AI? What are the things, you know, I love any policy that you're saying, keep it simple.
Yeah.
What are the main things that you think should be in an AI policy?
Yeah, I think the key thing with policy is absolutely keep it simple.
Yeah.
You know, what is your regime in terms of approving new AI tools? What AI tools are approved?
Yeah.
What's the process to approve new ones? But more importantly as well, what's the process around approval and the usage of those AI tools? You then need to look at your organization's mission statement and vision. Does your policy align with your mission or your vision as an organization?
Yeah.
And then you also need to highlight within your policy ethical use of the AI systems. You know, we have capabilities now to do things which potentially would be not aligned with policy procedures.
Yeah.
We need to reinforce the company's security policies, privacy policies.
Yes.
View on ethical use of AI.
Yes. Attribution. If you haven't written something, give attribution.
Yeah. But I also think more culturally, broadly, I think it's very important to let your staff know and the team know that you can use AI for these scenarios, but the buck stops with you. Because the reality with AI, no matter how good it is, and it is extremely powerful technology.
Yes.
I use it 7 days a week, you know, all day, every day. It's very important that people use it in the right way to optimize their usage of the technology.
Right. And that's important. So what are you using it for 7 days a week? Because you're not, is it only for work?
I know I'm a kind of an early adopter. I'm using it all the time when I'm driving my car.
And what other things are you using it for?
I'm brainstorming, business planning, strategizing, preparing for meetings.
Right. All because of voice.
I use the voice an awful lot. When I drop my son off at school and I drive back, I'm brainstorming, thinking through ideas, research.
Right.
I could be doing research and I could be asking to put it in a format. So when I do get home, I can download the information in a Word document or Excel. It's basically working for me as an assistant.
Right.
To brainstorm. And that's one thing I do find with organizations. A lot of users are using probably only 5% of the capability.
Yeah.
They don't really get the G in AGI, Artificial General Intelligence.
So talk about the difference there, because you're the first of our experts who's really highlighted that distinction between artificial intelligence and artificial general intelligence.
Yeah.
So talk more about that.
So artificial intelligence is the ability for machines basically to learn, to think, to make decisions, and now to act.
Yeah.
Artificial general intelligence just takes that a step further. It's the ability for machines pretty much perform a huge amount of the tasks and roles performed by humans. So they're generalists, general capability.
Yes.
So a lot of people underestimate the depth and breadth of the capability within these AI systems. And because of that, they only use maybe 5% of the capability of Claude or ChatGPT, for example. A lot of people still then, as a result, they end up buying or using 15 or 20 different apps all over their organization, because they don't really fully comprehend the power of the tools they've already got at their disposal or how to use those tools within their business. So you find a lot of the information in the media is about very gimmicky, using AI to do videos or logos, a kind of very narrow use cases. So when I talk to people, I want to embed AI into the fabric of an organization, that they use it every day across their organization, across all departments. So they get the value from it. Like, a lot of people look at AI from a very narrow perspective as a means to reduce their costs. And they're not looking at it as a way to improve the quality of their work, improving the quality of their business plans, the strategic processes and the strategic thinking. So I want to kind of broaden that use of AI across the whole organization, not just, let's say, in the programming department or in the marketing department.
I love that. I love the across and embedded in the fabric of the organization.
Okay.
I love the AGI distinction. So let's talk about a process that all business owners, well, most business owners and CEOs go through each year, and that's strategic planning. So you might have your standard approach or your model or face-to-face or your whiteboard or your team. How would you recommend, so a mid-sized business, a small or mid-sized business, how do you think adopting AI could really help with that strategic planning process?
It will have a massive impact. I think AI, it's critical. At a understanding level, a cultural level, we need to develop cultures and teams and a level of understanding that is ready for this rapidly changing environment. We need to have an adaptive and flexible culture.
Yeah.
But in terms of using it, you can use it to, obviously, we can use these tools to do things and perform tasks, but we should use them as assistants, advisors, as opposed to just little apps or tools we use for ad hoc tasks. So we should be using them like an additional board member, strategizing through ideas. We should use them for creativity inducing activities. We should be looking at them as very powerful portals to incredibly intelligent machines, which can provide massive value to an organization from a creativity perspective. But asking ourselves also, how is AI going to change the business environment in which a business operates? How is it going to change it in the short term, the medium term, and the long term? I appreciate that's quite a difficult thing to consider, but it's critically important in terms of strategy. So that's why I think the first step, I think, has to be developing a deeper understanding of AI, the impact it'll have on our business and the economy in which we operate. So then we can think ahead, okay, what will the economy look like in a year's time or 2 years? And what do I as a business leader need to do to survive and thrive in that new environment? Because it will affect every aspect of business, how our suppliers provide services to our businesses, how we operate as a business, but also will change the way our customers potentially act in the marketplace. It could result in an increase or a decrease in demand for our products and services. So we need to think about these moving parts and envisage where we'll be in the future and adjust our business plans appropriately. You know, it's an interesting exercise, but it's critical that we do that exercise, but we can use AI to actually facilitate us on that
journey. I know that's the postmodern side of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's two tracks here, because you're talking about in strategic planning the importance of looking at the environment around you and how AI, I love that, how AI is going to impact or affect your business in the short term, medium and long term, because there's a short term to this as well. But then using AI as another board member. So Tim Trumper, who we spoke to also recently on Vistage Live, said it's like you have access to a consultant on everything.
Yeah.
You have all these consultants. So it's also using the tools as part of the process, but part of the process is thinking about how AI is going to change your business.
Exactly, yeah. And I think the first step is just raising that understanding and the depth of understanding across the organization. Because we talked a little bit earlier on about a lot of these AI adoptions are being led by the IT department. I think that's too narrow a view. It must be much broader stakeholder engagement. So, it's very important that people really delve deep into the enormity of what's happening. The changes that are coming are significant.
Yes.
And it's very important for business owners and CEOs to really understand the significance of what's happening beneath our feet. A lot of people I talk to still think it's years away.
Yeah.
It's a long way away. But in reality, what's happening now is already quite seismic. And I think it's important that business leaders have a much deeper grasp of where we actually are right now. And then also then look ahead.
What's stopping them from getting that? What's stopping them from, and I have a theory, but what's stopping business owners, business leaders, CEOs from thinking, well, now I need to get into adoption mode? What's making people think it's in the future, it's not me, it's a gimmick, it's scary, it's just like putting all my numbers up onto the internet and letting anyone have them? What's stopping CEOs from taking that move, do you think?
I think there's a number of factors at play in that regard. We are in a very weird situation. We've probably never been in this situation before, really, from a technical perspective. Like only 2 years ago, the vast majority of the world were unaware of generative AI technology.
Totally.
So it's incredibly new.
Yeah.
And given that reality, the vast majority of business people and business leaders have had no training in AI.
No.
So their access...
Maybe a lot of conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of conversations, a lot of information consumed from the media.
Yeah.
One concern I do have in the media is that a lot of people in the media or the politicians have not received any training either.
No.
So a lot of the dialogue I find is quite repetitive and it's quite superficial. We've all heard the horror stories. We've heard about somebody who's been told to leave their wife. Yeah, we've heard of them swearing at customers and telling them that the company the AI works for is awful. We've all heard these horror stories. You know, the lawyer being kicked out of court because he's used fictitious case law. We've all heard those stories, and those stories are absolutely true. And for that reason, that's a key psychological barrier for many people. Say, I'm not going to use that. I've heard these horror stories. But they don't appreciate the rate of improvement. What was a problem 6 months ago isn't a problem today. The issues of 6 months ago have been resolved, and it's getting better and smarter and more capable every week. So it's very important that people appreciate the rate of improvement, but also with appropriate training, despite some of these drawbacks, you can get immense value from the technology. And a lot of people, sadly, are effectively throwing the baby out with the bathwater, basically.
And very early in the piece.
Yeah. So there's that element to consider as well. But another reason is that, you know, the narrative talking about increases in global productivity. I think a few days ago we talked about that very powerful quote actually from PwC, where they said that they envisage that AI will boost global productivity by over $15 trillion, which would be the equivalent of India and China's output combined, which is...
It's an amazing quote.
It's an incredibly powerful statistic. But I think And it's also very positive, and very positive from the perspective of the tech companies. But the reality is that economic output and value will not be shared evenly between companies, people, or countries, or within countries. And I think going back to your original question, I think it's probably also a problem with the adoption. You know, why are we struggling with some of these concepts? Yeah. Because they are so enormous.
Yes.
You know, it is quite challenging. It's quite jarring to realize that this technology is so capable.
Yes.
You know, you and I probably read lots of books, lots of experience, et cetera. It's incredible to realize this app on my phone can give me an answer which is equivalent to me or you on various business topics.
It is quite
shocking.
Yes.
I think a lot of people are still struggling with that reality.
Yes.
This intelligence is evolving so quickly and so fast.
Yes.
I think half the problem is even the term artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
It kind of demeans its capability.
Yes.
But I think it's important that the business people really appreciate the rate of evolution, the rate of improvement in the space is astronomical. I've never seen anything like it. You know, they're referring to its IQ now as being like an undergraduate level, moving towards a PhD level, with the aim to move towards like Nobel laureate level in the next few years. So,
which we'll all have at our fingertips.
Yeah. You know, more often you see people talking in the media about P-doom or their probability of doom. I don't know if you've heard that term.
No.
So you hear somebody, but it's very learned people, you know, leaders in the field of science are talking about their P-doom is 10% or 20%. But this is talking about existential threats,
you know,
significant AI threats. But we need to sit back and say, well, hold on. You know, a Nobel laureate is saying the risk of something significant happening is quite high. We shouldn't gloss over that. We should just say, what does that mean? Like, how is it going to affect the environment we work in? I think a lot more thought needs to be given to the reality of the impacts, and the reality of those impacts are coming very fast. I think 2025 is going to be a very big year.
And I think part of it is exactly what you said, Michael. We've never been here before.
Mm.
I mean, we've all been through change, and but we've never been in this situation. So perhaps it's taking longer for the human brain to get its head around the complete shift in the context that we all find ourselves in.
So I think it's very important that people go deeper than some of this narrative, which is being pushed by big tech.
Mm.
Obviously, they're there to sell products. They're looking to raise capital investment to build these massive data centers. But to delve deeper into terms of what really is happening, what's happening is we're commoditizing knowledge, we're commoditizing intelligence, and commoditizing labor, intellectual labor, knowledge work, and physical labor with robotics. When you think about that and you sit with that for a while, you begin to realize some of the seismic shifts that are coming. I think a lot of business leaders have yet to really sit with that. What does that mean, commoditizing these inputs and these elements? How will it really affect my suppliers, customers, the business environment in which I work? I think a lot more thought needs to go into that, just sitting with that reality, because too often I think it's kind of glossed over.
Yeah. Are there any industries, businesses, or roles that this is not applicable to?
Very few.
Right.
You know, it depends on the time scale.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you go for 20 years, you could say that nearly all jobs would be automated.
Yeah.
But that's the key thing to consider, the time scale. You know, nobody has a crystal ball.
Yeah.
But obviously, areas like sports, entertainment, you know, we'll still be watching soccer and, you know, people playing at that elite level. But incredibly, I read a few months ago that even Liverpool Football Club has been using AI for years to work in its strategy on the pitch.
Yeah, right.
So there's certain areas of roles won't be touched, but nearly all roles will be touched.
And
the key consideration then is when, in terms of the timescale.
So in summarising what I'm getting from you is, I love the, I think you've already taken the step into adoption. The way you speak is already about adoption.
Yep.
It's less about, it's like you've made a very clear jump, transition from this is new, this is exciting, look what it could do, what a novelty, this is unreal, to how can I use this in my life and how do businesses really need to make that jump?
Yeah, I think that's key. I think adoption is key, and highlighting the senior execs, the why of the adoption,
cutting
through the noise and the misunderstanding. It's all hype. It's a bubble.
Yeah.
It's about to burst. Oh, look at the stock prices have gone down. The big tech companies are playing a long game here. You know, they don't care about these short terms ups and downs in the market. But my key is not just about adoption. It's about simplifying the adoption. A lot of companies are over, as I said, overcomplicating the process. They're looking at it as like a monolithic IT project.
Yeah, that's
right. They need to integrate stuff. They need to get all the data right.
Yes.
And I think a lot of companies are overlooking their most important asset. And probably the easiest way to get short-term productivity gains is their staff.
Mm.
Educate your staff on AI, embed it into your processes. And that's the easiest and quickest way to boost productivity, work quality throughout your organization. At the same time, it's still a good idea to look at some of those IT projects and IT interfaces.
Mm.
But the quickest way to get value is by training your staff, put frameworks in place, and upskilling, embedding it into your culture, as opposed to looking at it as an IT project.
Educate your staff, get frameworks in place, embed it into your culture. I mean, it sounds like so many of the topics we talk about Vistage at Vistage Live anyway, and I think it makes so much sense here. I love the practicality of our conversation today. And Michael, I think a measure of a good conversation at Vistage Live is if I have to stop myself from getting distracted thinking about what I need to do. And I've been thinking it while you've been talking, I've been thinking, right, okay, well, I could do that or I could do this. I think it's been a really worthwhile discussion, timely. And Michael Donoghue, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a great discussion. Thank you.
So that's it for Vistage Live today. Thank you for joining us. Make sure you subscribe so you can listen to us each episode. And for more information about Vistage, check us out on vistage.com.au.